Welcome back to TRP.
Hi, and a warm welcome back to the Rosslare podcast. Today I'd like to talk about Rottnest Island. Where is Rottnest Island, you might ask? Well, Rottnest lies approximately 20 miles from Perth, off the coast of Western Australia. The Dutch were the first Europeans to land and document this beautiful island in the year 1696. With its stunning white sandy beaches and picturesque coves, the island was spared occupation by the Europeans because on the island is a furry little creature known to the indigenous as a quokka, a small wallaby-like marsupial which at first glance looks like a giant rat. The Dutch, having no knowledge of quokkas, assumed they were large rats and, fearing pestilence, decided to play safe and steer a wide berth. It was the Dutch who called the island Rottnest, meaning rat's nest. Today the island is a nature reserve, but it is possible to take the ferry from Hillary Harbour, Fremantle, or indeed Perth, and spend the day on the island, even longer if you so wish. It takes about 25 minutes if you leave from Fremantle, and about 45 minutes if you decide to leave from Hillary Harbour. And if you want to leave from Barrack Street in the centre of Perth, 90 minutes. The island is car-free and has a population of roughly 475 permanent residents as of 2021. And yes, there are more quokkas than people. The island has 63 beautiful pristine beaches and is a sort of paradise with its secluded bays and coves. It is no wonder that the residents of this island are known as the happiest animals on earth. If you should take the ferry, it will knock you back roughly 80 Australian dollars. But believe me, it is worth every cent. Many people who visit from the mainland take their bikes with them. Western Australia has some beautiful cycle paths running parallel to the coast, so nearly every local has at least one bike in his garage. If you are visiting Western Australia, just be warned, if you do go on a cycle, on the mainland or on Rottnest, remember that in summer it can get very hot around the middle of the day, and in the heat of the midday sun I would recommend that you seek shade, go swimming, but keep yourself cool. Bikes can be hired on the island, and indeed the ferry operators have bike car at the arrivals also. Snorkeling gear is also available, and with such pristine clear waters, this is the waters of the Indian Ocean we're talking about, one can enjoy a pleasurable day swimming around the reefs. If you find cycling a little strenuous, then you can take a hop-on, hop-off bus to the different areas of the island. Or you can always take the cheaper option and go on Shank's Mare, i.e. walk around the island. Most people tend to opt for a bike at around $30 for 24 hours. If you bring your own, which is such a nosy concept, the ferries charge you $15 per bike. The waters around Rottnest have been designated a marine reserve since 1972, and now long-nosed fur seals are again returning to the waters, having been hunted to almost extinction by the Polynesians over hundreds of years. With the advent of the Swan River Colony in 1829, the same year as Catholic emancipation on the island of Ireland, the island was initially used by the British settlers for agricultural purposes. What I personally found most impressionable was the sheer unspoiled beauty of the place. And how ironic that turned out to be, because this 19 square kilometer paradise island turned out to be prison. From 1839 to 1931, with the exception of 6 short years between 1849 and 1855, the island has been a prison and a forced labour camp for almost 4,000 Aboriginal people who were treated intolerably. During the Second World War, the island became part of Australia's defence system and many tunnels were built. The island was also used to incarcerate enemy aliens during those turbulent years. As I cycled around the island, I was drawn to a small, simple graveyard. What attracted me was its simplicity. There were, in fact, no headstones as we know them, but rather boulders with chiselled-out crosses on one side. Though they were in neat rows, they stood on parched earth, and only a few bore any inscriptions. One of the inscriptions read, "In memory of our dear baby, Florence Mary Storrs, died 10th of May, 1890, aged 10.5 weeks. And beneath it was the inscription, "A bud to bloom in heaven." There was a beauty about this sparse resting place. I felt the sense of a mother and father, or indeed both, toiling away to create these iconic headstones for their dearly departed loved ones. Some attempts were almost infantile, but I could see they were hewn with love for their partner or child. Other names in the graveyard included Luke Ackerman, age unknown, Henry Phillips, 7th B Rifle Brigade, died 1862, aged 46. Quinny Gurney died in 1893, aged 6 years. Patrick William O'Donoghue died in 1899, only 10 weeks old. And the one that caught my eye, Emily Shea, died in 1869, aged 9 years. My mother's maiden name was also Shea, and I couldn't help wondering what had happened to this child. Was she killed in some freak accident? Perhaps she might have drowned, or did she succumb to typhoid, malaria, or tuberculosis? And of course, I wondered, if I had the means, could I trace that poor child's family back to Ireland, back to Kerry, back to my family somehow? As I stood in the warm, sweltering sun, I wondered, did any of that girl's DNA run in my veins? And if it did, what was she doing so far away from home? Then another thought struck me. Where were the poor indigenous souls who suffered incarceration and forced labour on this patch of paradise? The ones who were the true owners of this land, the usurped, the oppressed, the disinherited, the indigenous people of this island, who, before 1967, were excluded from the census so as not to be included with the real people. Keep on listening to TRP.